Chapter 15. Huang Jian. Jack did not sleep well. Upon arriving back at his hotel, the first thing he felt compelled to do was to take a hot shower in an attempt to cleanse himself, not just from the physical, but the psychological remnants of the horror witnessed in Beidaiha. But no amount of water seemed to be able to dilute the images etched into his memory. When he got out, Jack found himself reaching out for his phone. The need to connect with his daughter felt urgent, imperative even. He typed out a long message to tell her how proud he was of the woman she was growing up to be, how much he loved her, and would always be there for her, and his hopes for her future. He ended by telling her how much he looks forward to seeing her again soon. Then he composed another message, this time to his ex-wife. It was shorter, more restrained, yet imbued with a genuine appreciation for her strength and role in their daughter's life. He thanked her for the safe environment she had provided for their child to grow into the strong, independent woman she was becoming. He had hoped for a sense of release, a momentary respite from the relentless pace of the investigation once he had sent the messages. Yet, as he lay in the dark, staring up at the ceiling, sleep remained elusive. The echoes of Dr. Bo's final moments, how his life ended within a split second without him being able to even register his own death, left Jack restless. Witnessing the sudden, brutal extinguishing of a life right beside him left a mark deeper and more troubling than what he felt when seeing Nick's and Mr. Young's corpses. The image of the surgeon's vacant eyes, unseeing yet seemingly piercing through him, replayed over and over in his head, a relentless loop that kept sleep frustratingly out of reach. He finally decided to put his restlessness to use. Taking out his notebook, he started to write a comprehensive report of the day's whirlwind events for Laura. He began with the grim discovery of Mr. Young's death earlier in the morning, described the victim's blood-soaked, smeared bathroom, and recounted the chilling reality that they were indeed dealing with a serial killer who was hunting after the transplanted organs of the disappeared business magnate Liang Wei. The report then shifted to the identification of Tang Shishi as the killer and their unsuccessful pursuit at the university hospital. Jack meticulously described the revelation about the seed phrase hidden within the victim's organs and how it tied the mysterious murders to a Bitcoin wallet holding incredible fortunes, transforming the case from a series of isolated crimes into the realization that further murders will occur to gain access to the largest bounty the world has ever witnessed. The end of his report detailed the murder of Dr. Bo, how the sudden, brutal silencing of a critical witness impacted their investigation, and the palpable sense of danger it injected into their mission. As he documented everything as objective and detached as possible, each typed word turned into a step away from the haunting image of Dr. Bo's lifeless eyes staring through him. With the report sent, Jack allowed himself to close his eyes again, and finally, he fell into a dreamless sleep. His brief respite was abruptly stopped by his phone. The display read a few minutes past 6 a.m. On the other end was Laura, whose voice expressed concern and disbelief. She thanked Jack for his report and was bombarding him with questions. They were rapid and pointed, focusing initially on the additional murder and its implications. The final confirmation that Nick's murder had not been a targeted attack against the U.S. brought a somber sort of relief to Laura, a small silver lining in a cloud of dark revelations. However, the astonishment in her voice was palpable as the conversation steered towards the revelation of the Bitcoin seed phrase intricately hidden within the organs of Liang Wei. Understanding the gravity and the potential international implications of their findings, Laura had decided to escalate the information to the State Department to keep an eye on the wallet. The conversation between Jack and Laura then shifted to a more personal tone, with Laura expressing genuine concern for Jack's safety amidst the unfolding chaos. They were in agreement that his active involvement remained key, essential not only to enable a swift U.S. response to any Bitcoin movements from the wallet, but also as their best shot at bringing Nick's murderer to justice. With the stakes now higher than ever, Laura's parting words to Jack were a mix between an order and a wish for him to tread carefully. Shortly afterwards, Jack found himself again in the all-too-familiar confines of Lay's vehicle. With a calm grip on the steering wheel, Lay shot a quick look at his partner. The weariness was plain to see on Jack's face, the usual sharpness of his gaze dulled by the restless night. Lay shared that, parallel to Jack's briefing with the U.S. ambassador, he had called Agent Zhang early in the morning to streamline their joint efforts. Zhang told him that he already contacted the Kuala Hospital administrator to let him know he was coming to go through their archives. He was set to catch the earliest flight to Kuala, aiming to delve into the hospital's records for clues about the identities of the remaining recipients of Liang Wei's organs. He promised to keep Secretary Liu and Lei informed of any new discoveries immediately. Their drive took them into the Feng Tai district. As Lei turned the car off the main highway and into the Yungang subdivision of Feng Tai, they approached a modern high-rise overlooking the area. Its glass surface caught the morning light, creating a dazzling display. Huang Jian's penthouse, Lei explained, was on one of the top floors. Still grappling with the fatigue that clung to him like a second skin, Jack looked up at the building. It stood like a glass fortress in the middle of the dense urban sprawl. He couldn't help but ponder the challenge it would pose for someone like Tong She She. Their arrival at the penthouse door was met not with the face of the man they were there to protect. Instead, a nurse, clad in the stark whites of her profession, opened the door. Jack and Lei shared a quick glance in mutual perplexity. Once the moment of surprise passed, Lei held up his badge. "Good morning. We're here to see former District Governor Huang Jian. We were told he has been informed of our visit." Before the nurse could respond, a voice, weary yet filled with old strength, echoed from the depths of the apartment.
"Is that them?"
"Yes, Governor Huang. The officers from the Beijing police have arrived," the nurse replied.
"Well, then let them in," the voice commanded, followed by coughing.
The nurse beckoned Jack and Lei to follow. They entered a tastefully decorated living room with floor-to-ceiling windows that opened to a large roof terrace. As they moved on, the scent of freshly brewed tea lingered in the air, drifting over from the open-plan kitchen they passed by. They continued on to the master bedroom, where a frail-looking man in his mid-80s sat upright on a large king-sized bed. Despite his frailty, the former district governor was dressed with an impeccable sense of dignity. His attire spoke of a refusal to relinquish the decorum of his past position. The crispness of his shirt contrasted sharply with his small frame, which seemed as though it might be overwhelmed by the weight of the fabric itself. His hands, resting on the bed cover, were marked with age spots and thin, prominent veins. His thin hair was combed meticulously, and his face was framed with deep crevices. His eyes were clouded by age, yet sharp with intellect. Even seated and cushioned on an array of supportive pillows, there was an undeniable air of authority about him, a lingering aura of power that illness had not fully dimmed. On the nightstand beside him were the sentinels of his current life, a newspaper from today, a remote control, and a collection of medicine bottles with yellow caps. An IV drip, its bag marked with blue writing, fed a steady stream of medication into his right arm, capped off with bright red connectors. As Jack and Lei entered the room, Huang raised a hand, beckoning them closer.
"I have been told you have an important message for me."
Lei cleared his throat. "Governor Huang," he began, looking over to the nurse and back at the old man, "this conversation requires the utmost discretion." Huang signaled for the nurse to leave. As the door clicked shut behind her, Lei got to the point. "Governor, we're afraid your life is in danger." Huang Jian's reaction was not what they had expected. A brittle laugh escaped him, quickly devolving into a fit of coughing that seemed to shake his entire body. The nurse reappeared at the doorway, but Huang Jian dismissed her once more with a weak wave of his hand. Regaining his composure, he looked at them, bafflement clear in his eyes.
"Officer Lei, look at me. My life is ending. I am well aware of that."
It's not that, Mr. Huang. Someone is out there planning to kill you.
Kill me? Why would anyone want to kill me now? I'm pretty much dead already.
His gaze drifted to the window, eyes scanning the horizon.
You know, Feng Tai has always been my home, he said. When I was born here, life was very different. Even when I was already at your age, Feng Tai was barely more than a rural backwater, lacking in the basic amenities of life. The streets were filled with farmers and livestock, not cars and commerce. Our homes were modest, without electricity, far from the high-rises that define the skyline now.
Lei listened, captivated by the vivid picture Huang Jian painted with his words.
I didn't know that, sir.
Nobody here had an easy life, you see. But I saw the potential of the people here, my people. Even with the riches of the Imperial City just a few miles away, we never blamed anyone for our situation. We never harbored resentment or envy. We understood that change and improvement can only come through our hard work, not wishes. And work we did. I did. I've dedicated half my life to serving my district.
A momentary pause allowed his words to settle in the air, but it was quickly broken by another fit of coughing. As the nurse hurried in with a glass of water, Huang Jian waved her off again, determined to maintain his independence even in this weakened state. His voice grew softer.
I've devoted my life to the service of our country, he mused, a hint of weariness threading through his words. An honest servant, that's what I aim to be. Never once did I stray from the path set by the party, nor did I allow corruption to stain my hands. My greatest hope is that I've managed to leave Feng Tai a little better than I found it.
His voice trailed off, and for a moment, Jack and Lei were left in an uncertain silence, watching as Huang Jian appeared to drift into a light doze. Then suddenly the old man stirred once more. He opened his eyes and looked firmly at Lei.
I appreciate you bringing me this warning, Officer Lei, but make it make sense to me. Why would anyone want to kill me now?
It's because of your lung, Lei explained.
This lung? That pile of rubbish? This lung, he said, gesturing towards his chest, was supposed to be my salvation 3 years ago. Now it's become my prison. It's failing me just like my old lung did before. Why would anyone want to kill me for it?
Jack and Lei exchanged a glance. Lei leaned forward, choosing his words with care. We're here because of a pattern we've observed. Two individuals who received transplants from the same donor that provided you with your lung were murdered in the last few days. It appears someone is targeting the organ recipients for reasons currently beyond our understanding. Huang Jian took a careful breath and looked at Lei with a knowing smile.
Officer Lei, my former position has taught me the futility of certain inquiries. Beyond your understanding, you say. That is fine. I can live with that. I suppose you are not just here to warn me out of courtesy?
Lei nodded, thankful that Huang acknowledged the underlying secrecy Lei was not allowed to break. No, Governor Huang, we are not. You are not the only high-profile target on the killer's list. You've dedicated your life to the betterment of our people. You could perform one last service to keep them safe. With your help, we can set a trap for the killer.
What is it you want me to do?
Huang looked at Lei and Jack, invigorated by the prospect of being of service one more time.
First, we need to understand your security situation better, Jack said. The killer wants your lung, so he has to get to you in person and not strike from a distance. Let's start with who's around you regularly and who gets access to your apartment. Could you tell us who has access to your living quarters? Specifically, is the nurse we encountered earlier your sole caregiver?
Li Hua? She is one of three. She's been with me for a year, sharing her shifts with Li Qiu Ying and Wang Mei Lin. I trust all of them implicitly. They are not only my nurses, but also my caretakers and cooks. It's just us here, day in and day out. Had any of them harbored any ill intentions, it would have been simple for them to act discreetly without causing any suspicion long ago.
And what about your security measures? Who can enter your apartment, Mr. Huang?
Well, it's not exactly the Forbidden City. I don't have any intricate security system in place. But the only way in is the entrance you used, and I'm always under the watchful eye of my nursing team, so getting in without them knowing is impossible. Unless, of course, your suspect is a cat burglar and comes in through the terrace, Huang said jokingly.
Half to himself, Jack noted, I wouldn't discount that possibility. Huang Jian raised an eyebrow in confusion, prompting Lei to redirect the conversation. Aside from your apartment, do you often go out? Perhaps where someone could have easier access to you?
Huang Jian shook his head slightly. My days of mingling are behind me now. However, I keep active with my weekly rehab sessions at my local hospital.
When's your next appointment scheduled?
Today, in fact. I'll be leaving soon.
Can you walk us through your schedule for today?
Well, it's quite a handful, but it helps. It starts here with me getting connected to another one of those.
He pointed to the IV bag hanging next to his bed.
It pumps me full with extra nutrients and vitamins. They say it is to get through the ordeals of the visit. I'm then taken to the hospital, where I am being wheeled from one activity to the other. It begins with tests on my lung function and a measurement of my...
Huang paused, struggling to recall.
Li Hua, could you come in for a second?
How can I help you, Governor Huang?
The nurse asked upon entering the room.
Help me to remember. What are the doctors measuring today again?
They're checking your bronchioalveolar lavage fluid for lymphocyte counts and your blood for its eosinophil count, Governor Huang.
There you have it. Thank you, Li Hua,
Huang Jian acknowledged, nodding as the nurse departed. He continued to outline his routine.
They then perform a lung CT scan. After the scan, I get about 2 hours for lunch and to recover in a private room, followed by an hour of breathing and stretching exercises. After that, they bring me home.
That must be it, Jack thought. A perfect opportunity for Tang Shishi, considering her know-how around hospital procedures and her ability to easily blend into such an environment. She will be planning to masquerade as a nurse at the hospital to get close to him. Lei had the same thought. Your time of rest in the private room. That's when the killer will attempt to strike. We'll set our trap there. Let me make some calls to prepare.
All right. If this is supposed to be my final act, let it be meaningful, Huang Jian declared.